Smart Girl Tribe is the UK's number one female empowerment organisation. Through the Smart Girls Handbook, the Smart Girl Summits, and this very podcast, we help women design a life and business they love. If you are looking to connect with other women or learn about boundaries, following your passion, building a business, navigating heartbreak, coping with mental health issues, among other topics, this is the destination for you. I'm Scarlett V. Clark, your host. Twice a month, I interview thought leaders and game changers to have honest conversations about womanhood for you to redefine your impossible. Hello, welcome back to the Smart Girl Tribe podcast, or welcome if you are completely new here. My name is Scarlett V. Clark. I am your host. How are you all doing? I have to be completely honest, I don't think I've been this busy possibly since my book tour. I have been speaking a lot in different universities, schools, and businesses. So I'm feeling slightly under the weather, but I am pulling through. I'm really excited about today's episode because not only is it the second episode of our new season, but the first interview of the season. Today, I'm joined by Gemma Perlin. Gemma is one of London's top coaches and is a globally recognised master NLP coach and hypnotherapist. She specialises in behavioural change. So today, we're going to be diving into the narratives and lies we tell ourselves and how to rewire our brains to change them. I loved recording this episode. Let me know what you think over on Instagram, either at Smart Girl Tribe or at Scarlett V. Clark. Enjoy. Hi, Gemma. Thank you so much for coming on to the Smart Girl Tribe podcast today. Could you please explain to the audience, what does it mean when we say the lies we have been telling ourselves? Are these conscious thoughts or subconscious belief patterns?
Yeah. Hi, Scarlett. It's such a pleasure to be on your podcast. That's a really interesting question. And the lies that we tell ourselves, yes, they're unconscious. So we have in our brains and our minds are like software. We have all these unconscious thought patterns that are in action on a regular basis. And, you know, beliefs that we have about ourselves or about the world. And beliefs, and when I realized this, it really blew my mind, but beliefs are not facts. They're just thoughts that we think a lot. And the thing about thoughts that we think a lot, they're actually often not true. But the thing is, our conscious mind thinks that they're really true. So the lie is very much an unconscious, but that lie can really start to actually kind of mold your life and your experience unless you decide to sort of begin to analyze it in a bit more of a in-depth way.
Mm-hmm. How do these lies develop, and at what age do these lies start to develop?
So these lies develop very much as a product of our environment. The things that we see, the things that we hear, the things that we notice, the things that we're around. And studies have shown that a lot of the ways that we perceive the world and maybe some of these lies that are created happen before the age of six.
One of the most common lies women in particular tell themselves is that they are not enough. What practical steps can these women take to change or challenge that belief?
A lot of the ways that people try to tackle this idea that they're not enough is they go, I am enough. And the issue with that is you're still playing within that same framework, that this idea that enough according to who, that there's this kind of external institution or structure that decides if you're enough, if you're worthy. So the first thing I'd recommend is enough according to who? Firstly, who's in charge of that? Well, I don't want to leave that in charge of anyone other than me. But also, what about if we lose this idea about being enough for anything? Mm-hmm. What is it like just to notice that you can just build a relationship with yourself that perhaps doesn't need to be defined in an external way?
I love that. And do you think every lie or belief can be changed with the right mindset? Is that ultimately what it comes down to?
First, it comes down to is how happy are you living your life with this lie, this slash belief, right? How much is it working out for you? The first thing is like, what do you actually really want? Well, if you really, really, really want to be able to present at work in an effective way, how helpful is it that you're walking around with a belief that no one really cares what you think? So first, it's like, why do you want to do this? Why is it really important to you? What's the incentive? What's the motivation to change? Once you have that, it's about recognizing on a daily, twice daily basis. I say to people, it's really good to do this when you brush your teeth, of what you would like to believe instead. And just becoming aware of the fact that, like, you know what, maybe I don't necessarily actually believe that so much anymore. What evidence is there to suggest maybe that I could believe something else instead? And the more you do that, the easier it becomes, and then the more it becomes unconscious.
Mm-hmm. And what if somebody came to you and they said, you know what, Gemma, I have this belief and I have a whole stack of evidence confirming that this belief is true. And it could be something, so for instance, somebody could be walking around, which I'm sure, you know, many women do, saying to themselves, well, it's really hard to find a good man because most men are liars and cheaters, and every relationship I've been in has proven this to me. How would you get them to change that lie that they're telling themselves? Or is this a lie?
So the thing about beliefs are they're like wearing a particular type of a lens on a sunglass. So everything you then see is through that lens, through that perception. So if you believe that all men are cheaters, your unconscious mind has to then provide you with the evidence to say that that's true. Because for us to live in existence, there are some beliefs that we do have to believe are real. Otherwise, we don't know what is real. And that is quite a scary concept, right? That actually, maybe nothing we know is actually the truth. What if we just don't know? So if we have these pair of sunglasses on, all men are cheaters, your unconscious mind will seek out every single piece of evidence to suggest that that is in fact true. And then the belief gets reinforced.
Okay. So if someone's now listening to this and they're thinking, wow, that's a lot to take in, what affirmations can they tell themselves that will challenge this lie? Because what's coming to my mind is maybe this person could start thinking, not every man is a liar and a cheat, just the ones I've been with, not me necessarily, but this person could be thinking, you know, what can they tell themselves that will challenge this belief? Because if they're coming to you and they've got this whole stack of evidence which suggests that it's true, how can they change that? How can they break that pattern?
Firstly, I would really want to acknowledge the part of them that has been damaged by people who have cheated and lied to them first. I think that's really important. This isn't about, you know, denying an experience. That is a really real thing. So I think it's about giving that part of yourself the love and attention it deserves, right? Because of that. But also noticing, if we go around saying not everyone's a liar and a cheater, our unconscious mind doesn't process negatives. It just hears liar and cheater. So I guess then I'd be really curious about, okay, what are you actually looking for instead? What do you actually want to find instead? And it's a weird thing. If we put into the, you know, sat nav of our brain, I'm looking for this in my life, there's nothing woo-woo about it. We will just start to find more of it.
I love that. And speaking of dating, because I've interviewed somebody else actually on the podcast, and we were talking about narratives that you tell, you know, yourself, almost stories that come up, which is very similar. However, today we're talking specifically about lies, and we were also discussing almost manifestation. So if somebody was coming to you and, you know, they said, you know what, Gemma, I have a whole stack of evidence suggesting that men are turned off by successful women, and now I'm in the dating pool for the first time and I'm trying to think my way out of it. Yes, I'm in a situation where this man is almost proving to me that that's still true. How can they break out of that if they're really, really trying? Are there any affirmations there that they can tell themselves?
What would they like to believe? Because then it offers them more opportunities to find that. It provides more evidence. You know, how would I know? I mean, it's like, how would I know if this was a man who finds being with a successful woman a massive turn on? How would I know? Okay, right. So how would I know that firstly? And then I wonder where they would hang out. Wonder how, you know, what kind of environments they go in. I wonder what kind of life they lead. Because then suddenly you've got actually much more tangible information about actually trying to meet that person.
How much do you believe in manifestation and the universe?
So I think there's been this massive trend towards manifestation in recent time. And I've got kind of like a slight mixed reaction to it, in the sense that I think it's really useful to put out and to know what you really want in life. Because I think one of the big problems of people come to me and they don't get what they want, if they actually don't know what they want. So I think it's really cool to be able to be like, this is what I want. However, sometimes with manifestation, I'm saying sometimes, there's not that much accountability for actually, okay, how am I going to make this happen? And it's not specific enough. So it's like, firstly, you need to be really specific, I would say, if you want to make things happen for yourself. And how are you actually going to make it happen? What are the steps that you actually need to take? You don't need to do all the steps in one go, but what is the first step? When does that start? And that's the way that you get from where you are to where you really want to be.
How much do you think external forces impact our belief patterns and the lies we tell ourselves? And what I mean by external forces, you know, such as parents, educators, the media we consume.
Huge, right? Like, we all have, as humans, we all have really similar brains, but why do we experience the world in different ways? And then why do so many people, right, like a lot of women, including, you know, myself, so it's like we're all having some kind of similar internal experience here, but then other people are not having this experience. Okay, well, what is it? Okay, so we're on Instagram, we're on social media, like we're reading the same magazines, like we're being exposed to the same kind of TV programs. You know, there are certain beliefs that we have in society, like that are upheld by various different kinds of institutions. I would say once you begin to understand how the unconscious mind controls over 95% of what you're doing, and it's always listening, it's always there, then you become a lot more mindful about, okay, what environments am I putting myself in? Like, what kind of people am I surrounding myself in? You know, like, we can't control, you know, what's happened in the past, but how can we take accountability for, like, actually what we expose ourselves to right now? People are really careful sometimes about, oh, what do I need to eat to, like, feel healthy and, you know, good about and nourished. We don't really think about the kind of environments we put ourselves in to the same extent.
I agree. And speaking of media, social media is great, but it's also not so great for various different reasons. For example, it's difficult to not compare ourselves on Instagram to other people. So what would you say to anyone struggling with comparison? Is the root of that just believing that we're not enough?
So I think comparison is incredibly easy when we have, our brain is like a computer, and we have this kind of computer or phones that are providing visuals continuously of other people, you know, experiencing their life. And, you know, often people go on their phone first thing in the morning and they're scanning Instagram and they're going through other people. And that's in the moment when our brainwaves are the most adaptable and able, you know, to take things on. So it makes total sense to me that people are comparing themselves potentially more than ever, because we've never been so connected and confronted by other people's experiences. And being connected is amazing. Like, that's probably why me and you are having this conversation right now. It's why I've been able to work with a lot of people, been lucky enough to work with a lot of my clients. But it's like, how much is too much? And when, how do we, you know, factor in this noise, this continual noise of other people living their lives and being confronted by these images?
So do you think that's, obviously it's not natural, but comparing ourselves on social media, do you think that it's a natural thing that's going to happen regardless? Or do you think the people who are most susceptible to feeling comparisonitis, as I like to call it, is the people who are telling themselves this lie that they're not enough, that they're not doing enough, that they're not working enough, that they're not parenting as well as they should? Or regardless, will everyone experience that?
So I think it goes back again to that lens that we were speaking about, is if you believe that you're not enough, the evidence finding part of that part of you will have to go and find that evidence, and it will find a lot of evidence about that potentially on social media, because it's actually providing like a massive case studies of other people. Whereas if someone perhaps feels like, yeah, you know, like I feel good within myself, like I know that I'm on the right path right now, I still think it's pretty difficult to not get drawn into other people's reality when you're being confronted on it on quite a, you know, specific level as well. You know, you get to see what people have for breakfast, you get to see their working day schedule, you know, you get to maybe see, you know, what their sleep schedule, their child has, all those kind of information. I still think that's really difficult, no matter how much inner work you do on yourself, to actually be immune against.
And one of the most common lies women have to navigate is believing that they have to be good girls or good women. Where does this lie stem from?
Oh, I just think this stuff is so ripe, and I just don't think it's discussed enough. And when I did a post about this on Instagram, I've never had so many messages from people about anything else. And so many of my clients who I see, the people pleasers, the people who on that kind of cycle of endless worry, have always been the good girls. They were the ones who were the most praised within their family. They were the easy child, the one that no one ever has to worry about. And I was like, wow, I'm really tapping into something here. I kept on hearing that. And I was like, okay, it's this idea about, yeah, being a good girl. And being a good girl is just so commonplace. Like, it's seen as the most effective way to parent. It's seen as like, oh, it's, you want to be a good girl, right? But actually trying to be a good girl means actually detaching and disconnecting a lot from what's actually, I believe, really going on beneath the surface. Because we're not a robot.
So let's dive into that then. If somebody was coming to you saying, I have a really bad case of good girl syndrome, what would you say to them? And also for anyone listening who's thinking, I have no idea if this is something I'm struggling with, how can they recognize if they're playing up almost to this image ideal?
Absolutely. And I remember I wrote some kind of like, I think it was like 6 signs that you're a good girl or something on my Instagram account. And I remember that some of those is kind of around that idea of like, are you always worrying about upsetting people? You know, do you worry that, you know, someone will misunderstand what you said? Or do you worry about getting in trouble at work all the time? Or do you worry about upsetting people? Do you feel a lot like you suppress your own needs? Are you always looking for validation that you're doing a good job, whether that's at work or in your relationship or in your friendships? You're always looking for that external, like, it's okay, you're doing really well. Those are kind of key signs, I'd say, that you are perhaps in that kind of trope. And then, you know, what you can do about it. It's like, I think it's a really individual journey. But for me, the first place is like, I actually didn't know what I wanted to be instead. And you really need to know what you want to be instead. Otherwise, it's really hard to make the change. And for me, it was like, having a conversation with my coach about this, and I was like, but what can I be if I'm not a good girl? Like, what is that instead? And he just said, what about being honest? What if you're an honest person or just an honest girl? And that totally, like, I just had no idea what that was instead. So understanding for me that it was about being honest, who I am, being honest with people, honestly felt like the most freeing experience that I could really have.
And what this change, this transition that you're talking about, did you see any consequences from that? Were there any shifts?
It's really interesting. I was really nervous that I would kind of get some kind of backlash in it in some way. But when I started doing it, you know, I didn't tell anyone I'm going to do this thing. I actually started feeling a lot closer, in particular to some of my friends. And one of my friends even commented, like, I just feel like we've always been like really good friends, but I do just feel like we've stepped up a notch in recent months. And that was because I was being more honest. And being more honest, it's quite enthralling when you're around someone who's really honest, I think. I think that's quite a magnetic environment to be in. So I noticed that. I noticed that I was getting even better results with my clients. And I also noticed within myself just a real feeling of freedom and less fear.
What would you say are the most common lies that women tell themselves? Obviously, being the good girl is one of them, but having so many clients, do you notice any particular themes or patterns that come up?
Yeah, definitely, Scarlett. One of them is this idea that, like, oh, I'm just an empath, or like that there's something very definitive, like, oh, just because I'm an empath, I have to, you know, let people dump their shit on me on a regular basis, be cool with the fact that sometimes people don't make any time for me and it's all about them. Or, you know, just because I'm a people pleaser, and this idea that if you're something like that, then you can't change that. It's almost like an integral part of your personality, and personality is always shifting. We always have, you know, an opportunity to have another experience or another way of doing things. So I think people think it's quite a definitive thing, and they come to me looking for ways to manage that. And then actually I'm like, well, you know, there's this thing called flexibility and we can actually change actually how we do things. And that doesn't mean it's always really easy. It's like a habit that you have to break, but it really is possible. And then another theme that I see quite frequently is this idea about, and it's a really toxic belief in the way that it then has ramifications, this idea of like, I am responsible for other people's emotions.
Mm.
So I have to guess how other people feel. And also I just have to, you know, worry about how people are going to handle things. And there's a difference between being mindful of other people's opinions and what people might think and how people might feel, but between being responsible for them.
I find those two things really interesting. I think talking about being an empath, it's really refreshing to hear your view, because I've gone years saying I'm an empath. And then last year, I actually called myself out for it, because I thought, this isn't a good thing going around saying I'm an empath. And how I have always been an empath is, if I see someone crying, I cry. I'm able to really pick up on other people's emotions, you know, even energetically. I remember a few years ago, I was actually in my bedroom and I wasn't doing anything in particular. And I had this overwhelming feeling that a friend who lived in a different city from me was going through a hard time. And I called this person and they confirmed that they were having a hard time. So that's how I've always related to being an empath. And it's always something I've really liked about myself. But then I really called myself out last year, because I thought, you know, I'm not seeing any benefits here. And all it's doing is I'm telling myself over and over and over, I'm an empath, which, you know, is true. But equally, the consequences of that, you know, it's not great. It's not beneficial. I wouldn't have chosen to be an empath. So I've tried to call myself out and just break away from that pattern, because all it really does is give people more space when they hear that to, you know, mess you around and mess your own head up. Because they think, well, she's an empath.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, being an empath is different to being empathetic. And I think, like, you know, being empathetic for someone is really like, it's a way of connecting with people and like being really there and like being there for people, but doesn't mean that's your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something interesting about, yeah, what to like decide when you want to be empathetic, and decide sometimes when maybe it's not super useful, because it could be really draining all the time always having to be empathetic for people.
For anyone who wants to change or challenge a lie that they have been telling themselves, are there any questions they can ask themselves to break that vicious cycle?
Yeah, I think firstly realizing that a belief isn't a fact. So it's a thought that you think a lot is really helpful, because then it's like, oh, okay, I've got an opportunity to believe something different instead. And then secondly, well, like, yeah, that thing that you thought, according to who? According to who is just kind of magic three words that for me always has the power, and with my clients, to just sort of take us out of something. And then it's kind of interesting to think, okay, what actually could I believe instead? If I don't need to believe that this is a lie, and this is something, a story that I told myself that might have been helpful, or, you know, there's no disrespect to that, but what actually might be more helpful in allowing me to live the life that I really want?
I think those three words are really powerful. And what's coming up for me is, I was having lunch with one of my girlfriends last week, and she had gone on this amazing date with somebody and then hadn't heard from him. And she was just, as you can imagine, just spinning because of it. And she was telling herself, you know, it's because he doesn't like me. It's because I had something in my teeth. It's because I acted poorly. It's probably because, I remember her saying to me, it's probably because I went to the bathroom at the same time that he went to the bathroom, and he finds me really weird. And she was literally spinning, telling me these were all of the reasons why. And I had to say to her, well, what evidence, you know, who has told you that he doesn't like you? Because you don't know that. Of course, some people might be listening and saying, well, she didn't hear from him, so it's suggesting that he didn't feel that way. But it wasn't necessarily for all of the reasons that she was telling herself. And equally, I mean, I haven't heard anything, but she might have heard from him now. But yeah, in those first 5 days, I saw her after the 5 days, and yeah, he hadn't reached out to her. So I think that's a really positive thing, or a really powerful thing to ask yourself, you know, according to who has told you that he doesn't like you because he found you weird? Well, nobody. That's just a lie you're telling yourself.
Yeah, for me, it's like that kind of like that snap out of it.
Mm.
It allows you to break that spell. And I'm a hypnotherapist as well as a coach, and people always ask me about hypnosis, and oh, well, what's hypnosis? And I'm like, we hypnotize ourselves on a regular basis with these kind of lies or like these beliefs or things that we say to ourselves. And then we're in a trance. We just don't know we are.
Mm. Wow. Could you just explain to people listening what that means? How are we living in a trance more often than not?
Sure. Because if we have these sentences or these beliefs running under the surface of all our thinking that we don't think about, you know, we don't think about how we sleep. We don't think about how we dream. We don't really think about the process that when we see a door, we just intuitively know how to open it. Like, you know, if I'm thirsty, I don't think about the fact, like, how do I pick up a glass? I just know how to do it. That's very intuitive to us. We're not aware of what's happening. And I believe the same thing is happening when we have these kind of beliefs that feel really intrinsic to us, or these stories that we tell ourselves. We don't even know that they're a story. We don't even know that they're a thing that we're doing, because it just feels like reality.
Do you think, to have a conversation with people around you if you're trying to change a belief that you have about yourself? If you are holding on to a particular lie that you have been telling yourself, and then you want to change or challenge that lie, do you need help from other people, or is it actually not down to anyone else to help you? It's just about getting your own mindset right.
I think it's really useful to, you know, be accountable and, like, you know, working with someone, and I would say it's like I'm a coach, but, like, you know, working with like a coach will really offer you that full stepping back and stepping back out of it. Because I find sometimes that if we're not rigorous enough about this process, people will just sort of kind of often move to form something that's like adjacent to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it's a coach or a therapist or whoever you're, you know, getting support from, if that's possible, financially possible for you, right? That can be really helpful. And in lieu of that as well, it's like telling friends, telling people around you is really helpful, because getting any kind of support, or, you know, externalizing that, when we externalize things and we say things out loud, our brain interprets that differently. It feels more real.
Mm-hmm.
I think being able to verbalize this and articulate it to people in your life who can then also then support you, and those moments and times when maybe you're doubting the change or whatever it is, who can remind you, is really, really valuable.
If somebody came to you and they said, I have been holding on to this lie, you know, that might not necessarily be a lie, maybe it's just a belief. So if somebody, for example, comes to you and says, you know what, I am a super controlling person, I'm a complete control freak, because I believe that, you know, the more controlling you are, the more you're able to control your destiny. So this is a belief that if somebody were to come to you and they had this about themselves, I think it would be very natural in your position to think, well, that's very, you know, that's kind of an odd belief to hold on to. That's not necessarily true. But if this was a belief that had helped this person get to like superstardom, really, really successful, are there some, in that case, would you say, you know what, you've got this lie, or you're holding on to this belief, but it's obviously worked well for you, so just keep with it? Or would you still say, even in those circumstances, no, that's probably not a healthy lie to hold on to, you should probably work on that?
So I guess from capacity of a coach, you're coming at this totally as a blank slate. So when I'm sitting talking to another human being and I'm in a coach state, I have no idea of nothing, no, none of my opinions, nothing of what I think, none of my beliefs are important. All I'm really interested in is like what they really, 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 really want. And then do they have the frameworks and the beliefs in place to really help them get there? So is this belief they currently hold, it's got nothing to do with any perception that I have, right? Is that really supporting them? Is it really helping them to get to where they really want to get to? But I often find if I'm having a conversation with someone and they're coming to see me, it's like, it's probably not really working out right, but it might be another belief that's important. So I guess it's like everyone's an individual, and just being really open to the fact that like it's your own individual reality, and it's just, is this working out for you and what you really, really want?
That's such sound advice. Because it's not quite the same, but I grew up abroad. I'm English, but I grew up abroad. And I've lived, you know, abroad since. However, when I started, you know, setting up my business, I was very much like, right, I've got to be based somewhere. And the belief I was telling myself is, well, I won't be as successful if I'm not based in London. That was the lie I was telling myself. That was the belief I had until I moved to Paris. And the success I had in the few months living, you know, when I was living in Paris, is just the ripple effect it had. And it completely challenged that core belief that I had held on to for like 7 years. So I find that quite fascinating and really sound advice that you provided, because that was, you know, a lie that was challenged and changed very dramatically, because obviously it was a huge thing. And the success I've had since, you know, that was only last year, the success I've had since has been greater than any of the success before.
Yeah, imagine if you just thought that you had to live in London still, and maybe that, you know, the ripple effect of living in Paris has had a really big impact on like you being able to do what you really, really want. But that might not work for other people. Then we're all so different, and we have to really start living by our own North Star, right?
Yeah, completely. I want to talk about lies in relation to other people. If you're someone who believes that they are not worthy enough, or they're not worthy of a great relationship, so then they settle and then they decide that they want to change or challenge this lie, but they know it's going to come at the cost of maybe, say, their relationship. Do you think that's necessary? What steps should or shouldn't this person be taking?
Firstly, if this someone's listening to this, like, just want to really acknowledge that it takes a lot of bravery and courage to really notice that maybe some of the things that you believed, or, you know, situations that you're in, maybe aren't working out, because that's a really courageous thing to do. And I'd say, like, yeah, proceed, you know, slowly but surely. You know, do you believe that, you know, when you think about the life that you want to lead, do you believe that it is with that person? Do they align? Do they make you feel they offer the opportunity to live the life that you really want? Do they fit into what you want? Not because you're on a path with them, but on a path that you really want to take. You know, is it a question of changing communication with them? Or is it something quite intrinsic? Like, is there a gut feeling that it just isn't quite right? And I think being curious about all of those things, potentially before, you know, feeling like you have to act immediately, can be really useful. However, I have some people who just, like, they just get a sudden reaction. You know, I work with, you know, a couple of people who, you know, they started working these connected to their relationship, and after the first session, you know, they go away and they break up, because they're like, well, I actually don't think I could do this process, Gemma, fully, because being with this person is actually stopping me thinking on what I really, really want. So again, no hard, fast rule, just giving yourself space, I think, and permission to really explore what it's like to not be in that relationship, potentially.
A lie I do also want to dive into is imposter syndrome, which is really the belief that you're not worthy of glorious things happening to you and for you. Why do you think some women struggle with this more than men?
I think a lot of women, certainly who are clients of mine, experience imposter syndrome, is because a lot of beliefs about what women can and can't do are fed into us at a pretty young age. We don't have the same visibility of people doing the things that maybe men have, right? Certain sector of men might have growing up. So this idea also of, like, you know, if you're working somewhere and none of the senior board are women, the idea that you're dreaming that you could be a woman, if you don't see someone who's doing something in the way that you really want, immediately it then feels much more challenging. However, I also think this idea about imposter syndrome, where I understand naming it and calling it something, is meant to bring awareness to the fact that women feel like frauds. I sometimes think it can be quite counterproductive, because then women are having to this idea that they need to be grappling with this idea about being an imposter, this idea about imposter then plays on their mind. Whereas actually, I think sometimes if we actually think about it more like, okay, what do we want to achieve? What do we actually need to get there? Because this idea of a syndrome that we need to battle and we need to go against, actually, I think, can take us off track.
Mm. So diving into that then, how do you think the conditioning differs between boys and girls, or the treatment?
Well, I think men are hired more frequently by men who are in senior positions, right? We look at like the boards of most FTSE 100 companies, you know, you're constantly, and your unconscious mind is constantly getting this reassurance that there is a clear path to getting where you want to get to. And I think that's why it's so important what, you know, most companies are doing now and on TV and all our media, of this idea about representation, because that is so crucial to me in being able to explore what you actually really want if you know that there's someone who's already got there before. And I also think, you know, this idea about being a fraud, you know, not being good enough, I think a lot of the time, even though it's a really unpleasant experience, I think a lot of the time, a lot of people who are very successful hold those beliefs. And we have a belief that that's actually quite an important way to actually get to where we really want to get to. The thinking, oh, I'm not enough, I'm really bad at this. I find a lot of my clients who think about those things are all really, really like successful according to some kind of classic parameter of what success means. So can you actually find a way to achieve what you really, really want without feeling like an imposter? Because a lot of people, this thing we call imposter syndrome is a huge driving force in them achieving what they want.
No, I find that really interesting. I find it so interesting. So I've never experienced imposter syndrome really up until recently, in the past 6 months, that the kind of route that my career has taken, the success just in my life, you know, again, according to whatever success means, yeah, it's just been so great in the past 6 months, and I'm kind of living this life that really has surprised me. And it's like I find myself now, you know, at kind of the peak of traditional success that I've experienced, thinking like it wasn't, you know, on my way here that I ever experienced it. It's now that I'm experiencing it. So I do find that idea of imposter syndrome really interesting.
How does it affect you, would you say, now?
That I, in some ways, really positive, because it's just like nice. It's just like pinch me moments. It's like, oh my gosh, like I genuinely can't believe that I'm here, or this opportunity's presented itself.
You're appreciative for things, I'm sure. Yeah.
Completely. You know, my book was chosen as UN Women's Book of the Month and WH Smith's Book of the Month. It was just lovely. So it's like, oh my gosh, that's so lovely. But then equally, it's like, oh my gosh, I've now become the person living the life I've manifested for, you know, a decade. I am fully living that life. I'm living, you know, in West London in a townhouse and things like this. And it's like, oh my gosh, right. Okay, I've actually become that person. What, you know, what does this mean? What next? You know, I need to maintain it. It's quite a hard thing to like grapple with, because I'm so appreciative. But then equally, I find myself, whereas I'm sure a lot of people would reach success and they'd almost settle into their success, they're like, oh, this is, I'm so relaxed, like I've wanted this for so long and now I'm here. I'm like, you know, talking to friends every single day, like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of freaking out. Like, I'm actually living the life that I always manifested. And I, you know, didn't actually think it would come true. I was just kind of hoping it would. And now it's come true. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting better and better. And it's almost, things are so good that you're now living terrified, because it's like you've got everything you've ever wanted.
Yeah, someone's going to take it away from me, that fear. Yeah. That's really common. And that comes a lot from, you know, weirdly enough, it's not weirdly enough at all, but like very commonly enough, it comes from childhood a lot of the time, that this fear that, oh my God, things are going really well, something bad's going to happen, is because often then we have experiences when we're children, right, in the schooling system or at home, where we think everything's fine and then suddenly it's not.
Oh, how interesting.
It's that kind of like daily reassurance that you can give yourself that things really will be okay. I definitely got that last summer on holiday. I remember I was in Bali. I'd always really wanted to go to Bali. I was having a massage in this place that I'd like really was so like grateful to be there. And I was lying in the middle of this massage and I was like, something bad's got to happen, because how can I be so lucky to be experiencing this massage in the middle of Bali right now? Like, how is this like, surely not, like, surely, like, really? And I found it, you know, my partner has a joke about me that things can't be too nice and we can't go anywhere too nice, can't experience anything too nice, because it's almost like I get like an over gratitude. Like I'm like, I'm just not worthy of this. Like I can't relax into it. It has to be slightly grotty or something has to be slightly awry. And I think that's interesting. And I think it's a lot to do with that inner child within us that's scared. And so now I kind of just work on like, right, okay, how can I soothe that part of me and let it know that it's okay? Like things really could be really great for you. And you know what? They really could get a lot better even.
Yeah, I think it's it's definitely, it's very new, you know, to me, just what has happened. And yeah, this imposter syndrome, you're completely right. It's that fear. You know, because it is every day that I'm kind of, certain things happen, I'm like, oh my gosh, is that really the, you know, case? That's amazing. And, you know, just all of these things, because as much as you can manifest and you hope, and I can't speak for everybody, but at least I always did, I thought, oh, that probably won't happen. Like, it seems too out there. It seems too outlandish. It seems too ostentatious. That can't possibly happen for me. And it is one of those, you are almost living in fear, like, okay. And then the other thing that I notice is that in small areas, if something isn't quite like perfect, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's the thing that's meant to go wrong then. Because everything else is going so well. That must be the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We all have, a lot of us have these patterns.
Yeah. Okay. So to anyone coming to you then and then saying, that's what I'm experiencing, this imposter syndrome, but this living in fear that things are going to be taken away or something's going to go wrong, because equally you're telling yourself a lie there, because you're telling yourself, oh, well, that thing must be, you know, destined to go wrong because so many things are going well. How can you challenge that?
So I would, in distinction to imposter syndrome, I guess I call this more like a hypervigilance state. And this is going to sound challenging for people because we obviously, you know, a lot of the stuff is very intellectual. We grapple with, it's in our heads, it's in our minds. But the way to really do that, work with that, is through the body. So yeah, we can't control what's going to happen, but we can control, you know, how we respond to things. And something that I found really helpful, and my clients have as well, is like self-soothing through the body. So when we notice that fear, you know, how can we hold ourselves? How can we hug ourselves? I know it sounds like such a small, simple thing, but the body really holds a lot of our intelligence and a lot of responses. So, you know, if you get that fear, where do you feel that fear in your body? You know, for me, I feel a lot of fear just like the pit, like of my, you know, chest, like just above my stomach. So can I, you know, give myself some soothing? Can I, you know, nurture that part of me and say, you know what, like, you know, everything's gonna be, I don't know, like, but for me it's something along the lines of like, it will be okay. Whatever happens, you've got through stuff before, it will always be okay. It really will be okay. But combining that with a physical touch,
I love that. I think that's very important, you know, even kind of getting in touch with your inner child. Absolutely. Is really interesting. And I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen the new Barbie film, Gemma?
I have not seen the new Barbie film. I'm really hoping it's on the plane that I'm taking tomorrow.
I won't say anything, but the messaging is so profound. And you think you're going in to watch this light-hearted, nothingy, trivial film about Barbie, about a plastic doll, and you just come out of it and you're in bits. And you kind of have this realization, and all women around you are having exactly the same realization. Obviously, it's taken, you know, social media by storm because so many women are in agreement, that you're kind of leaving the cinema and you realize that you need to be healing your inner girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the conditioning and all of the expectations, all of a sudden, within the space of 2 hours, you're confronted with it all. And I feel like, for me, when it came out, it was such a pivotal moment, because I've been experiencing so much imposter syndrome recently. And it's almost going back and thinking, oh, the younger me really wanted those things. It's almost disappointing her, me living in fear, like, oh, things are so good that that's not for me. That can't possibly be for me. Something must have to go wrong.
I can't wait to see. I love Greta Gerwig. And yeah, it's like, how can you, that little girl within you, like, what does she really want? Can she, like, how does she want to enjoy all these wonderful things that are happening? How can you hold her hand through it?
I end the podcast with two questions. The first being, what is your favorite quote or the mantra you live by?
I think we live in a world where we think a lot about what we don't want. And just from my understanding of the way the mind works, I think it's really helpful. And then when I wake up every morning, I really try to do this. I acknowledge whatever feelings are coming up with, that's frustration, tiredness, sadness, anger. And I notice those feelings and I think, you know what, I'm a human being. But then I ask myself, Gemma, what do you really, 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 really want? And I won't always have the answer to it, but just asking myself that question really frames the day that I think best suits the life that I want to lead.
Lastly, what books or podcasts on this subject would you recommend to our audience?
So a couple books that I think are really helpful, a few books actually, is Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor. And I know that's going to sound like it's going to be a very dark read, but he wrote a really famous book, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of, called In Search of Meaning. But what I really like about it is it's about this idea that, you know, we can't control our external circumstances, and his were the most harrowing, atrocious things that a human can experience. But we can always, there's always that space between, you know, what's happening and then like our response. And I always find that a really inspiring read. Another one is The Body Keeps the Score, which is the first written sort of scientific body of evidence that suggests how the mind and body are inextricably linked. And if you're someone who's interested in exploring, you know, soothing your inner child and working with the body to change how you feel and the unconscious mind, that's a really interesting read. And then anything to do with, I'm a neurolinguistic programming practitioner, anything to do with NLP, which is the framework, I guess, through which, you know, I do the work that I do with people, is really, really helpful. And anything written by Richard Bandler, who was one of the co-founders of NLP, is really brilliant.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today, Gemma.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. It's been such a pleasure and a real honour. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Smart Girl Tribe podcast. You are my community, my family. So for more motivation and inspiration, I'd love for you to join the Smart Girl Tribe Society on Facebook. Find us on Instagram at Smart Girl Tribe and head to smartgirltribe.com to find out about our next event. Please do subscribe and rate the show. It's the fastest way you can help us help you. Until next time.